Welcome. This is James Corbett in the rainy climes of Western Japan.
And this is James Evan Pilato in the unusually sunny climes of Portland, Oregon. And we welcome you back to the New World next week, which, of course, you can find everything you need, video, audio, documentation, and more on newworldnextweek.com. James, as you and I talk, it's still, of course, Independence Day here in the States, July 4th, and it seems as though most of America is on fire in one way or another, financially or physically. But we're going to take this episode and look beyond America and go around the world, as this is New World next week. And we'll begin with one from Threat Level with a little bit of good news. European Parliament kills global anti-piracy accord. The European Parliament on Wednesday declared its independence from a global anti-piracy accord rejecting the Anti-Counterfeit Trade Agreement, or ACTA. The vote, 478-39, means the deal won't come into effect in European Union member nations and effectively means the global accord is dead. Its fate was also uncertain in the U.S., despite President Obama's signing its intent to honor the deal late last year. There was a looming constitutional showdown on whether Congress, not the Obama administration, held the power to sign the deal. Overall, not a single nation has ratified ACTA, although Australia, Canada, Japan, Morocco, New Zealand, Singapore, and South Korea last year signed their intent to do so. The European Union, Mexico, and Switzerland, the only other governments participating in ACTA's creation, had not signed their intention to honor the plan, even though they've created it. That should tell us something. More than 3 years in the making and open for signing until May of next year, 2013, ACTA exports on participating nations an intellectual property enforcement regime resembling the one in the United States. ACTA, James, which the Obama administration maintains does not require congressional approval, also calls on participating nations to maintain extensive seizure and forfeiture laws when it comes to counterfeited goods that are trademarked or copyrighted. A U.S.-backed footnote removed from the document more than a year ago provided for the termination of internet accounts for online infringers. So until European Union authorities began leaking the document's text more than a year ago, the Obama administration was claiming the accord was, that's right, James, national security secret. We have many other related updates, but James, I'll throw it back to you for the death of ACTA.
Well, I don't want to walk on your toes with the updates, but I think those will provide the context that we need to properly understand this story, because I'm with you. This is a good story, and it is a victory, and we have to celebrate the victories as we get them, because there are so few and far between. But we also can't be naive and believe that this is a final victory, or that this is somehow going to tip the balance in the favor of the people against the would-be tyrants and oppressors. Of course it isn't. This is just one step along a path towards attempting to fight for a free and open internet, but as we know, there are so many other ways in which we're being cracked down on, monitored, surveilled, and tracked on the internet. So the illusion of freedom is only that, on the internet, I'm afraid. So Internet Independence Day is, I'm sure, a long way off. And that goes back to what we were talking about last week with the six strikes thing, the ISPs coming together to basically monitor all internet traffic to make sure that you're not doing anything you shouldn't be and downloading anything illegal, guilty until proven innocent. And unfortunately, as you're about to point out in the related updates, there's a lot more going on in that direction and in that vein. So ACTA's dead. Great. Let's make sure that every time they put up this terrible, disgusting legislation like this, we knock it down with the power of the people. But let's not go to sleep and pretend that we've won the battle for all time.
So essentially, what difference does it make if the big global treaties are shot down when the massive corporations are just going to buckle and go along with anything international governments want? So from the Associated Press, Twitter shares information on government demands for user data, basically now saying, yes, we've been giving information to the government, but here's how many requests come in, and it's similar to what Google has been doing. On another note, James, black boxes to monitor all UK internet and phone data. We've got stories from The Telegraph and Russia Today. Foreign powers will be allowed to access email and phone records. So, James, for more on this, you can go to cyberspacewar.com, but you can also get more on Twitter at Media Monarchy.
Indeed. Well, and Twitter Corbett Report. We're all jacked into this matrix, even as we're pulling people out of it.
So for our second story, James, will return to the nuclear nightmare in Japan from your own Fukushima update by way of the Associated Press and Reuters and more. Japan restarts first reactor since the Fukushima crisis. Dozens of protesters shouted and danced at the gate of a nuclear power plant as it restarted Sunday, the first to go back online since Japan shut down all of its reactors for safety checks following the Fukushima nuclear disaster. The OHI nuclear plant's reactor number 3 returned to operation despite a deep division in public opinion. Last month, the Prime Minister Noda ordered the restarts at reactors number 3 and nearby number 4, saying people's living standards can't be maintained without nuclear energy. Many citizens are against a return to nuclear power because of safety fears after the Fukushima accident. Crowds of tens of thousands have gathered on Friday evenings around Noda's official residence chanting no to nuclear restarts. Protests drawing such numbers are extremely rare in this nation, often known for orderly conformity. A demonstration in Tokyo protesting the restart and demanding Noda resign was planned in a major park this coming Sunday. Although initially ignored by mainstream local media, demonstrations across the country have grown as word spread through social media, sometimes drawing Japanese celebrities including Nobel Prize-winning writer Kenzaburo Oi and Ryuichi Sakamoto, who composed the score for the movie The Last Emperor. All 50 of Japan's working reactors were gradually turned off in the wake of last year's massive earthquake and tsunami, which sent the Fukushima Daiichi plant into multiple meltdowns, setting off the worst nuclear disaster since Chernobyl, and we have documented, unfortunately, probably far beyond that. James, the other story also linked on FukushimaUpdate.com, Japan's energy policy in flux as nuclear restart begins. This basically gets into all of the corporations and the private interests, James.
It really does. And first of all, I think they underplay the demonstrations in that report. So I would take it with a grain of salt. Dozens of protesters makes it sound really small and pathetic. But if you go and watch the videos that have come out at the Tokyo anti-nuclear protests, which are also up on FukushimaUpdate.com, you'll notice that there are thousands of people in those protests that are quite raucous and that confront the police, etc. So there is a pretty strong anti-nuclear protest movement here, and it is being, of course, underreported by the media, which has a vested interest in keeping these types of things under wraps. But the people are steaming angry about this, and they're angry because what this entire crisis has really proven and demonstrated is that the complete reliance of the Japanese economy on nuclear energy has been proven to be a lie. Back in the early part of this year, my part of the country, out on the western side of the main island, was talking about 25% shortfalls during the summer months in terms of energy production because the nuclear reactors were offline. Everyone was saying that's a load of steaming bullcrap. So they revised that down to 14%. Another group came out with an estimate that there was going to be an actual energy surplus because of different energy sources coming online, because of conservation, et cetera, et cetera. There was going to be a surplus this summer. So I think part of what we see going on here is the restarting of these reactors, the hurry to get them back online is to try to head off at the pass the growing awareness amongst the Japanese public that nuclear energy is not the only thing that Japan has, the only thing they can rely on. And there's the real sense here that there is a great opportunity to look for other methods of energy production here. And of course, I mean, you can look at geothermal. Japan is using literally 0.1% of its capacity in the geothermal realm, 500 megawatts a year. Even the Japanese government admits they could easily increase that by a factor of 30. Absolutely, there are other sources of energy for Japan, and they basically don't want the Japanese people learning about that, because obviously the entire energy paradigm here has been built around the nuclear energy industry, and they're projecting trying to get the entire energy market up to 50, even 60% running on nuclear energy by 2020. So So this is all part of the lie. And of course, the energy industry, not only in Japan, but around the world, wants Japan to, there's incredible pressure right now to restart these reactors. So this is really a battlefront for the future, I guess, of Japanese energy and perhaps nuclear energy around the world. It's extremely important. That's why I hope people are following it at FukushimaUpdate.com. I'm also going to be talking about it on Corporate Report Radio on Friday night. So I hope you'll tune in for that.
James, I would just make the quick note, it really kind of hit me as you were saying it, and I was discussing it earlier. My home state of West Virginia, of course, as I noted, most of the country is either baking or have had horrible storms or fire, all those things. Top news the other morning was still, you know, days after the storms, West Virginia is still without power. And my girlfriend and I were talking about how, you know, how ironic it is that a state that is synonymous for coal power, that ultimately it doesn't really get into the benefit, it doesn't get any of the money. And when things go bad, they'll be the ones still sitting for weeks without power. But we'll save that for another time and move to our third and final story this week, James. And we'll grab it from beyond the paywall of the Wall Street Journal. Eurobank supervisor faces hurdles. Officials say year-end deadline tight and role of overseer is up for debate. European leaders who last week set an end-of-the-year deadline to create a new policeman to oversee Eurozone banks have set themselves an ambitious timetable that some officials admit they will struggle to meet. The decision will ignite fierce debates about the role of the new supervisor, set off turf battles over who should hold the new powers, and raise questions about whether the European Union's single market in financial services can survive. Setting up a powerful Eurozone banking supervisor, a significant move toward closer economic union within the 17-nation currency bloc, was a German condition for its agreement to allow the bloc's bailout fund to recapitalize banks without first lending the money to their host government. James, I have related bits from the Daily Beast on the CEO resignations at Barclays Bank with scandal links to the Bank of England.
Right. Well, I think once again, this shouldn't be too much of a shock to people who have been watching this entire Eurozone crisis unfold. And of course, it's what we've been talking about for years now, literally, that this entire crisis is going to be used to plunge the European economic zone into a situation where basically the consolidation of power and even more power in the hands of the banksters and in the hands of Brussels will be the proposed solution to this crisis. So again, we've watched this coming with attendant horror, and hopefully we've done a good enough job of spreading the word to the people about what this is really about and the agenda behind this, so that they'll at least question when the people, the banksters and the bureaucrats come in and say, oh, trust us, we need more regulations, we need more power and control, that'll solve everything. I trust that people will be skeptical about that, but again, it's up to the people of Europe now, and I certainly hope that they're up to this task of taking on the banksters and bureaucrats.
James, in closing, we'll once again remind folks that on Thursday nights, I join you live on Republic Broadcasting for Corporate Report Radio, where during the second half of the show, we go over all the latest from the world of food, health, and environment from my own site called foodworldorder.com, and I'll bid you farewell on this 4th of July from the USSA.
Just before you go, I just want to mention to everyone out there that I am now doing videos of my radio show and my podcast, full hour-long videos. But of course, GooTube hates me and vice versa, and GooTube will never allow me longer than 15-minute uploads. So they're all going up to blip.tv. If you're watching New World next week on GooTube, you have to go to CorbettReport.com to find the videos for the radio show and the podcast. But I think they're worth checking out, so I hope you'll do that. At any rate, I will talk to you tonight. So talk to you later.
All right. Take care.